dumb idea. Right, exactly. This gentleman's name is Jello Biafra. Before he goes on, we have a little bit of a presentation to make. What is your name?
Renderman.
This is Renderman, and what have you done?
I own JelloBiafra.org.
A couple years ago, Jello was complaining that he didn't even own his own name, so Renderman has been working to get JelloBiafra.org and...
.net.
.net back, and slowly we are returning this man's name to him.
Yeah. There's the login info.
Oh, I thought you'd have to do it up on this nice platform here. Fade the lights a little bit if you can. It kind of better. Although, no, don't fade the house. I like to see the people and all. Oh, where did you go? There you are. Let's make this real. There we are. Photo op. Well, thank you, kind sir.
No problem.
And now I have a new problem. I also finally got to start to think, okay, if I've got it, what the hell am I going to do with it? Because I already have my little record label, AlternativeTentacles.com, and so any stuff about me that isn't the unofficial stuff, and there's so much of it, I just decided to let people do what they wanted with it. And so what I'm going to do with these, they may just all route to the Alternative Tentacles site, or we may find a way to let people just throw up there whatever they want like they used to and leave it at that. Anyway, well, as Grace Slick said at Woodstock, it's a new dawn. And to follow Mark's Pepsi commercial thing up here, which I thought was hilarious, one of the other, I've had a really weird set of adventures since I've been here. I was a last-minute addition to this program when somebody canceled after Emmanuel saying, oh, why don't you just come out and hang out? And, you know, I was like, a Zeus, oh, a specimen. Will you even cite me in the woods or whatever? But anyway, so thanks to H2K2 for having me once again. And for continuing to fight the power that be. But earlier this week, part of the reason I was able to do this was I was already in New York because I had been flown in to address a convention put on by, who was this, Jupiter Media Metrics, in association with Billboard Magazine, in other words, major label executives and dot-com uber capitalists. I was to talk to them about the future of digital music. I thought, what do they want me for? I mean, who canceled at the last minute? So they want me in there, because the previous years they'd had Chuck D and Alanis Morissette and others. They were, wait a minute, what do you want me for? Well, all the other speakers were so boring. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to do what I really wanted to do in the first place then. So I went to this thing called Plug.in, was the name of it, over at the Hilton up on 53rd Street, and the keynote address was by somebody named Congressman Rick Boucher, or how does he pronounce his name? Two people said Boucher, two people said Boucher. This is a sensitive point with me, because that's my legal name too, and only two teachers ever said it right. That's why I got another name. Anyway, So he was giving the keynote address, and then, let's see, subscription services and beyond, targeting the new music consumer. Targeting, in the rifle scope, bang, bang, you're dead. And the people on the panel, what do we got here? Somebody from EMI Music, somebody from Wind Up Entertainment, Listen.com, Full Audio, Savage Beef Technologies. Anyway, then there was going to be a research presentation, Generation Y Online, a sneak peek at the new online behavior and demographics report. And how do they obtain this information? I mean, privacy is becoming a bigger and bigger issue even than before, especially because everybody is talking about file sharing and fair use and all. Well, Larry Ellison of Oracle right now is trying to convince our government that his idea of fair use is to apply the Oracle model of interfacing all these different information databases on people into one and apply that to government law enforcement. They'll see you when you're sleeping. They'll know what you're awake. They'll know if you've been bad or good because of what you buy or don't take, whatever. Anyway, that scares me. Then keynote address the first day, and I was like, my God, why do they want me here? Hillary Rosen. Noted Tipper Gore and Joseph Lieberman lapdog, who, again, as Mark says, pretends to be the artist's friend, but if they actually, she works for the benefit of the cartel of five corporate major labels, all run by people who could care less whether they're selling nuclear bombs, lawnmowers, or music. What other things did they have? Teen music consumption. An on-stage focus group. So for these executives to figure out what should we force feed teens, I even hated that term when I was a teenager, teens. Now, they had four real-life teens as specimens on the stage. Three of the four of whom said they didn't buy CDs, they downloaded all their music for free. And the fourth kid was the daughter of somebody who worked for Jupiter. And they said the reason for that was because they didn't have any money to buy all the CDs at their present prices. And then right after my thing, the closing panel, the grand finale, guess what it was called? Artists Are Brands. Just so we can make everything and even humans into a brand and possess not just their creative work as our corporate intellectual property, but them as our property as well. They are a brand, after all. Coke, Pepsi, M&M, Limp Bizkit, all the same to these people, apparently. The Digital Club Network CEO is on the panel, David Goldberg, VP and GM Music at Yahoo. Let's see, who else? Somebody at AOL Music, somebody at Maverick Record, and of course somebody from Jupiter. Anyway, I took my time, as you might guess, to tell this audience why I hated major labels, why I tried to buy nothing from them, why they deserve to be downloaded and file shared, and all they put out is shit for the most part anyway. And that it's not as though these teens they want to focus on are not unaware that a lot of these major labels don't pay dick all to the artists. They, Hillary Rosen and the rest, claim, oh, we're going to bat for the artists. No, they're going to bat for themselves because they take the money and then charge it back to the artist, saying, oh, well, we should owe you all this money, but we have expenses. We took 50 college radio people out to lunch at a fancy restaurant without telling you, and you paid for it. We made you go into our corporate-owned recording studio and pay triple the hourly rate that somebody who wasn't on our label would go to record there. And we got the big name producer where we gave them a huge chunk of what's supposed to be your money. Then some of it was kicked back to us, and you get none of it, etc. And, of course, now that you get to travel in your big rock star tour bus, never occurred to you you were paying for that, too, did it? Anyway, so I made the point that I think somebody else made, it was Mark again, right before I was on, that what the huge boom of Napster and then post-Napster says to me is that people want choice. They want more choice. The Clear Channel doesn't own every radio station in the United States. They just own 10% of them, which is still obscene, because they really do, you know, kick out all the local news content for the most part and the local public affairs programming. KDIA in Oakland, when it was bought out by a Clear Channel rival, Disney, it was an African-American station. Kick-ass, soul, jazz, funk, hip-hop library, that all went out the window, so I suppose they could pipe the music in from Atlanta. you know, people want more choice. And the beauty when Napster was in full swing was there were all these things like radio shows from the 1930s and live radio plays featuring very, very well-known actors that were considered lost to history. And somebody found them and put them up there, and so it was recovered. So it was almost a library for the world in a way. So the question I had for these folks is, okay, with all the evidence that people want more choice and 7-Eleven saying, oh, now you have a choice, ho, 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 ho. Incidentally, also at the Hilton was Voyage to Freedom, 75 years of 7-Eleven convention was going on there too. So why is the industry solution less and less and less choice, and this obsession of, you know, like the RIAA and others, of denying people choice at all cost, denying people choice? And business, all big business, always says they want less and less regulation. Libertarians say this too, and more marketplace solutions. Unless, of course, the marketplace solution doesn't fit the profit margin that they had in mind. And if even the teen focus group in this company is saying that they download because CDs are too expensive, and when you're supposed to only buy a full-length album and there's only one good song on it, why not just take the song? The reason they do this is because they don't have any money, as the teens of the focus group said, but this is dwarfed by people in other countries, like Brazil, where the record recording industry thinks there's a huge piracy problem. A legal CD costs $11, equivalent of $11, less than it does here. Pirate one, an equivalent of $2. And the average wage is in Brazil is $70 a month. So which way are people going to go? Therefore, sure enough, file sharing and burning and everything else has turned out to be the marketplace solution that the privateers preach so much all the time. And the proof, according to Rock and Rap Confidential, was in India, this was going on in such a rampant scale that even the major labels cut their CD prices in half, and CD sales went up when the price was cut in half, 150% for Sony and 300% for BMG. You wonder whether the Ashanti album that just went sky high in the charts for Def Jam, maybe part of the reason was they offered a $2 rebate. Plus, the major labels engage in their own piracy. One of their forms of payola is to give all these chain stores hundreds and hundreds of copies of an artist's album for free and not pay the artist for them. That way, the chains get to sell all these and make all the money. But essentially, if the artist ain't getting nothing, that's sort of a pirate too in a way, only it's the major labels who are doing it. And I reminded them, just as I mentioned here the last time I was here, that the beauty of the digital age is that for every barrier they try to put in our put to block us and every little toll booth and fence they put on the information highway, some bored teenager somewhere of any age is always going to find a way to fuck the whole thing up. Every time. And sure, they got their wish and sledgehammered the original Napster into what it eventually became, but it was kind of a Medusa effect. Look how many heads grew in its place. It's bigger than ever now. Again, Rock and Rap Confidential reported 38,000 peer-to-peer sites have been identified this time around, up 535% from last year alone. People want more choice and control over what they get to listen to. And I admit, just like last time, I have mixed feelings about the whole thing in some ways. Last time, as an artist, I mentioned that my gut instinct was to side with what eventually became the Metallica suit until I looked into it and talked to some people and realized it wasn't what Lars and crew said it was. And at that point, it was actually helping promote artists very big and as small as I am, where people were downloading, file sharing, and basically getting other people to go out and want to buy the real album eventually, and sales both for the major labels and for the little folks like us at Alternative Tentacles, and I suspect Sealand, whose Negative Land's in-house label, went up in the short run. But then last year and this year, it's gone totally the other way, and people of our size who not only operate outside the mainstream entertainment industry, but also outside the corporate punk industry, and, you know, would rather offer something that's musically interesting and challenging than something that sounds exactly like Green Day, Rancid, Bad Religion, NOFX, Blink-182, et cetera, you know, no offense to some of those bands, but it's not my favorite kind of music and not what we want to do. And we're having a harder and harder and harder time getting rid of enough copies to be able to pay to make the damn thing. And in the long run, what this is resulting in is independent labels who are helping out unusual artists who nobody would hear of otherwise are going under and falling like dominoes. And the artists, some of them giving up, going back to work full-time, whatever, and we're getting less of an underground because of this in some circles. So, again, I plead that if it's somebody you really like and you know that the money's going straight to them, at least give them the benefit of helping them out. I mean, Mark here said earlier, you know, he's not a rich man, and the money he made from this is going to help him fix his car. That's the state we're in. We're not all like Hillary Rosen and the RIAA trying to rip everybody off. We're just trying to survive because, like Mark, I'm just a high school graduate. Well, I had 2 months of college, but studied acting and history of Paraguay and then decided I'd rather be in a punk rock band. And my father told me how naive that was and I should wait and get a degree first and then maybe try it as a hobby. And I said, ah, fuck that. There's a time when you got to dare to be wrong and be ready to fuck up, and haven't looked back since. But I mean, it's gotten to the point where when I was in Italy last year, all these people are coming over, oh, I really like your music, I really like your new stuff too, and see, I downloaded it all on my MP3. Oh, thanks, friend, I guess. But sadder still in Italy was this wasn't just underground file sharing. In some cases, it was a very organized pirate operation run by the mob, which I don't think anybody in this room really wants to see being able to take over this thing in the name of fair use. There were people walking into restaurants, African economic refugees, one every 15 to 20 minutes in one restaurant I was at. You know, they didn't know any English or Italian or have any idea what the language to talk to people, just holding out pirate CDs, begging, please give me some money from one of these pirate CDs, knowing that whoever his boss was or whoever trafficked him as a live pet or a workhorse into Italy was going to whack him one if he couldn't get rid of those pirate CDs that day. So it was almost indentured servitude and slave labor in the name of selling pirate CDs. And I don't think people who treat other human beings like that should have access to mass piracy of other artists' work, even the big artists, because they're just abusing human beings in the process. And but in the current climate, as far as file sharing of, I guess, my best-known project, my old band Dead Kennedys, goes, I had to admit that it didn't really bother me much because, as of now, I'm not seeing a dime from any of it anyway because, unlike the happy ending to Negative Land's adventures, I've had a horrible one that I mentioned last time, and it's still going on. The other three ex-band members sued the shit out of me starting 4 years ago with an attorney who'd represented Journey, Boston, Doobie Brothers, and other notable punk consciousness activists from the underground. Basically, they went after me in a dispute that started because I didn't want my favorite song we ever did, Holiday in Cambodia, to be used in a Levi's Dockers TV commercial. Yeah. And So then they trumped up all these charges that I'd burned them on royalty payments and that, you know, our label should not be allowed to make a dime on dead Kennedys, even though some of it was spent putting their own solo albums out that nobody else would pull out. They wouldn't compromise, wouldn't settle, dragged me through a jury trial. I did not luck into a pro bono lawyer, so I'm really in debt at this point. And they even called up an expert witness at the trial from Grateful Dead Records who testified that that I should have to pay them $500,000 in damages because the people who now claim they wrote MTV Get Off the Air, they claim they wrote all my songs now, too, and that I didn't write any of the music. Therefore, I should have no say, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, they claim that I should pay them $500,000 because the people who claim they wrote MTV Get Off the Air were not regularly on MTV steadily for the past 15 years after the band broke up. And to their own visible shock, the jury believed them. So they've run off with all the rights to Dead Kennedys and marketed them in the slimiest way imaginable and handed them off to a label called Manifesto, who is run in part by the attorney who represented SST Records against Negative Land in the U2 dispute. That's the kind of mentality going on here, but still has time in his busy day to send nasty emails to kids who write him asking him what's up with my getting totally screwed in regards to Dead Kennedys. So, and then the other three guys' lawyers sent a letter last August announcing they're not going to pay me a dime on anything anymore because they want me to give them $140,000, which is they claim is my share of their legal bill to sue me. This is the level of greed going on with these guys. And then they decided to do a fake reunion tour that's still going on and came through Brooklyn a little while ago, having an ex-child TV star, is for the singer instead of me, Brandon Cruz, who was in the courtship of Eddie's father years ago, and a few smaller bands like Dr. No. They put him up there. He didn't even bother to learn the words. And says, oh, they mean so much to me. It's like winning the lottery to be in this quote-unquote band, and they didn't even learn the words. And on top of that, is it fair use to put a picture of the band with me in it in the newspaper ads and the flyers advertising a show I'm not going to be in? Well, I've run out of money. I mean, I had to file something on that one, but anyway, this is where we cross the line of what is and is not fair use. You know, just like Julia Butterfly, the tree-sitting activist who was trying to help save the Redwood Forest, she comes down from the tree 2 years later, and then some dot-com company put somebody dressed up and made up to look exactly like her sitting in a tree in an ad to try and make it look like they were down. She was down with that and all that, and she challenged them on that. Anyway, I also, so that was my attitude on Dead Kennedys was, I mean, file sharing doesn't hurt me a bit right now. It doesn't hurt me any more than anybody else connected with it does. Especially, so if you see anything in regards to Dead Kennedys on the labels Manifesto or DK Music or Plastic Head or Cleopatra, just keep in mind the mentality behind it and that somebody's getting hurt in all this, and feel free to spend your money somewhere else. Oh, yeah. I don't want to whine on that subject too long, but they've also used money they owe me to launch not one but two websites attacking me and lying about me and pumping up how wonderful Brandon Cruz is and how wonderful they are. And these websites, shall we say, could stand some improvement. DeadKennedys.com and DeadKennedysNews.com are the two fraudulent websites. But speaking of big-ass fraud, I also couldn't resist chewing on these necktie people intermixed with smart-ass loft-yuppie types at this digital music convention to chew on them a little bit about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act And Congressman Boucher or Boucher, whoever, says he's trying to modify it so that small-time people who just have an internet radio station for fun and don't charge any money for ads or anything else don't get hit with all these huge fines and everything. And I can see that point, that people who are small should not be required to pay, but people who are like the digital radio arm of Clear Channel, yeah, you play my stuff, you owe me something, because you're laughing all the way to the bank. But if you make it like a percentage of gross revenues, the people who aren't making any money but are just doing it for fun don't have to pay any money. And that's the way it ought to be with that. I pleaded with them, say, hey, wait a minute, you let the people and the blind people, the people in the wheelchairs, the people in the middle of nowhere play some stuff in your own back catalog that you're too caught up in your corporate bullshit to even know exists in your vault. It would stimulate sales. You might even be inspired to reissue some of it, or at least license it to Rhino or whatever. And they were sort of, only about 5% walked out on me. I was shocked. Even nastier, and I don't know the status of it right now, there was a bill introduced by Senator Ernest Hollings of South Carolina, who has been a problem for a number of years, not the least of which was kind of trying to help Nixon out during the Senate Watergate investigation way back when. Even then he looked ancient, and he's still there, and he's vastly younger than South Carolina's senior senator, Strom Thurmond. What's up with South Carolina that they send these cryogenically frozen people into Congress again and again and again? The ossified brain cells and all. Anyway, Hollings was also a big one in favor of slapping ratings on music and games and everything else. The big one for that now is Senator Joseph Lieberman, who was chosen by Al Gore to be his vice president. So when people argue with me that Nader cost Gore the election, and if Gore was president right now, everything would be different, you Greens cost us the Supreme Court. All I have to say in reply to that is, look who Gore picked for vice president. What do you think his Supreme Court would look like? In addition to being the number one enemy of free speech and underground culture in Congress, Lieberman also on the campaign trail said, the Constitution guarantees freedom of religion, but not freedom from religion. He said that. He's been on Pat Robertson's show, patting Robertson on the head for all the great efforts he's made in a spiritual revival. Lieberman is such a bigot that if he were a Baptist instead of a Jew, he would have been run off of Bush's ticket for being so openly intolerant of other people's spiritual values and point of view. That's how bad Gore was. They say, oh, well, Gore wouldn't have pulled out of the Kyoto Treaty to stop global warming. Wanna bet? He went to Kyoto in 98 to try and nuke it and water it down right there. I mean, I was going to do this later, but I'll do this now. I mean, my other reply is, you know, no, Ralph and crew did not cost Gore the election. Gore cost Gore the election. Because there's a lot of us who gave up on voting because the choices were so bad who have gotten into it again because ballot initiatives are so important for one thing, and we're going to vote our conscience for good people, and I don't care who the opponent is, I ain't voting for nobody who is pro-drug war, pro-Star Wars, pro-World Trade Organization, pro-war on terrorism. And Gore bragged at the Democratic convention that he was the one who got Clinton to sign Newt Gingrich's evil welfare bill that's multiplied our homeless population exponentially. I mean, the guy has ice water in his veins, if he'd be proud of that. He bragged that he was one of the few Democrats in the Senate who voted in favor of King George I's Gulf War. Luckily, the convention hall was silent at that point. Nobody cheered. I'd gotten in at that point with a quote-unquote borrowed press pass. I was being a TV reporter for Free Speech TV, which is part of the Independent Media Center and shows on a lot of community television networks. And couldn't believe it. I finally wound up. I had to get off the floor because the 20-minute pass expired, get up in the upper deck, and then these 5,000 comatose, Truman Show-ish, frighteningly straight Democratic Party delegates to this convention all burst into rabble-rousing applause like it was a Nuremberg rally or a Riefenstahl movie or something. Yay! 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 All waving pre-provided signs I hadn't seen there 5 minutes earlier saying, Tipper rocks! Tipper rocks! Tipper rocks! Well, if that doesn't show how much the contempt the Democratic Party has for people's intelligence and memory in this country, I don't know what does. No, my friends. No, my friends. Tipper doesn't rock. And neither does the Democratic Party. That's why I registered green. I also couldn't resist making these people laugh at themselves, pointing out that originally the film industry thought video rental would kill them off and make them go under. And it turned out to be the biggest influx of cash they've ever had. And the major labels used to put these little stickers on the back of albums saying, "Home taping is killing music," showing a cassette with crossbones and all. "Home taping is killing music." And I asked them, "Is it dead yet?" They failed to respond. So I told them, you know, suing and arresting students and getting people fired for their jobs for downloading music onto their computers, that is not the answer, and squelching free radio and small labels is not the answer. If they really want to maintain where they are now, or at least stay in the game, they could give people better music with well-packaged albums that had more than one good song on them that would make people want to buy them, especially if the price was right. But if they carry on, as they are now in the long run, the game is over, and I don't feel a bit sorry for them because they deserve to go down. And if the RIAA does get Ashcroft to lock up every wicked file-sharing music fan, they can find some place to put them all, of course, along with all the other patriotically incorrect heathens slated for the gulag and all, who will be left for the major labels to blame their slumping sales on then? To some degree, they're listening. A billboard bulletin that was given to everybody there said that, full audio is now, has 75,000 songs from BMG, EMI, Universal Music, Warner, which will all be available for rent at a 2 monthly pricing tiers, $9.95 for 50 songs. That's not bad, actually. And $17.95 for 100 songs. Which is actually, I think, isn't that like more than double 1995 by 5 cents and all? Anyway, it used to be they wanted you to pay $1 a song or $2 or $3 a song and not give you any artwork. So fighting them by file sharing has forced them to curtail their greed, at least somewhat. But anyway, to move on, then I visited a friend I knew by phone and fax but had never actually met. Since I was 13 or 14, I've been a voracious record collector whose tastes got more bizarre and eclectic as times went on, and that still hasn't stopped. And this guy's main area of expertise and his fondest stuff was something that's not even in the incredibly strange music books at all, a genre I didn't know existed, namely corporate sales convention albums. Yes, there were these things where they'd have either, well, this one's from GE Executives, actually. And, yeah, I'll show it in a minute here. I got to describe these first. Maybe I should put the mic on the stand at this point. That's what I'll do. Anyway, maybe they still have these, I don't know, in some form, where they would bring in the smaller town salesman or, you know, the executives for one, salesman for another, whatever, bring them all into a convention somewhere and hire a musical performing or vaudeville troupe to write and perform an entire staged musical about how great the corporation is. And I don't know whether these albums were recorded in the studio and given out to everybody at the convention, or they all got them in the mail as their souvenirs later on. A few of them are recorded live, so they might have come later on. But there's hundreds of these out there. Search your thrift stores. Tell people at used record shops, don't toss these back if somebody brings them in, because they're really, really demented, a lot of them. One I have at home, but I don't have here. Oh, by the way, some of these were bootlegs. Some of these songs on a CD a few years ago called Product Music that was put out by persons unknown. Anyway, and there's no hope of getting this reissued because you have to negotiate with Frito-Lay and General Electric. Go Fly a Kite is this one. And there's Ben Franklin, and they have a little... a token beatnik, long-haired beetle guy in here. And there's Satan. And, you know, how General Electric and electricity makes heaven out of hell. Here's the scantily clad babes on Greek statues. And then on little phony-looking circus train cars are all the new GE appliances. The caption is, "Make a woman out of your wife." Toasters, hair dryers, etc. And guess who's in the cast? Valerie Harper. Loretta Swit got started in these. The people who wrote Cabaret a few years later. Apparently there's an album of a musical they wrote for a Ford tractor convention. There's Rhoda very clearly in that scene. And it starts out, "Welcome to Williamsburg," and "Adam and Evil," A-T-O-M, is another song, and, Technological Witchcraft skit with Valerie playing one of the witches. Anyway, if a turntable eventually shows up here, I'm not sure they can unplug it and bring it up here or not. I haven't heard these yet, but I'll pick tracks at random and play them for you. Okay, because that means maybe people will get to hear some of the Coca-Cola convention from San Francisco. Look at this shit, too. They spared no expense on this one. And one of the songs in here, I mean, the best of these are the ones that weren't meant for ears outside the company. Coke Goes with America. Okay, Folks and Cokes. We'll Build Our Road Together. Whatever America wants, smile, it's great business. But then we have that big bottling plant in the sky. And what they sing about on the big bottling plant in the sky is no environmental protection agency, no occupational safety inspectors. If they're that worried about the EPA and we're drinking the stuff, what the hell are they putting in Coke? So now if you're a journalist, you know better than to ask, what are your influences when you're around me? I mean, punk rock, where I come from, has a terrible problem with conservatism and anti-creativity now, and it's because people listen to too much of the great master bands and the same bands. They don't explore and find things like this. Or the Exxon Retailer Convention from 1979, and one of the songs, what have we got? Fugue for Dealers. Once Around the Car, I'm Starting My Future Today. Major Surgery. The one I'd heard on a tape here earlier that made me want this one was an Exxon dealer's wife who talks about how wonderful the Exxon dealer's wife is because she washes his oil-stained clothes every day and makes him breakfast and dinner and is always there at home for him and all. It's a spooky, it's a look inside yet another kind of culture, in a way. And finally, back in San Francisco, like the Coke one, the 1986 Pepsi advertising premiere. Clear back in 86, there's rumors of an Enron one of these, too, but... And the whole first song, and this has got lyrics on the back, man, we're talking... heavy-duty songwriting here. The whole first thing is ridiculing Coke for the new Coke fiasco. And then another song is called The Pepsi Universe. Out there, it's a Pepsi universe, thriving since time began. I haven't been able to play this yet. I couldn't sing it because I don't know what the music sounds like. But it gets worse. Pepsi Everywhere has the following. Come on. Let's get it in the light. Let's not get it in the light. It's hard to read this black and gold in this light. Here we go. Here... No, that's not the one. It's, okay, here we go. God, I can see myself in the gold. This is getting creepier. When our route truck calls on Niagara Falls, it's an all-day affair because that famous flow is no longer H2O. Pepsi's everywhere. In the morning when you see grass as moist as it can be, that's not nature coming through. That stuff on the grass is Mountain Dew! Anyway, we'll play that a little later if we get a turntable up here. I brought the 45 I got by somebody who's so far off the Rush Limbaugh scale, he's accusing coma patients of being welfare cheats. And all. People ask me in Europe, why do I still live here? With stuff like this going on, why would I want to live anywhere else? Home is where the disease is! And that's as close as a segue as you're going to get to the next part here. Last night I was at a panel that was facing the other direction in more ways than one that included a speaker named Robert Steele, who I think is talking in the other room or doing something else tonight, but I can't not be up here and not vent a bit of disagreement with some of the stuff he had to say. He was talking about how he felt that the FBI was way behind the times in the digital realm. And when he said that, I was thinking, good, I feel that much less threatened by them. But he was saying we should not, you know, we should all, people with the kind of skills that a lot of you have should be offering yourselves to the FBI to help improve their technology to fight terrorism. Well, even another person on that panel said, hey, wait a minute, they were so obsessed with fighting one small congressman named Bella Abzug, who admittedly was so right on you'd never find her in Congress today, and then they let the pilot slip through and Zakaria Masui slip through and not even read all the stuff that was in Arabic in people's apartments of the people who blew up the World Trade Center the first time. You know, the FBI has a very skewed opinion of what constitutes a terrorist. Exhibit A, Kevin Mitnick. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, with all due respect, I totally disagree with that point of view. Don't offer yourself to the FBI. Fuck the FBI. Yeah. With the knowledge in this room, they're not going to use it to fight people who could actually set off bombs and kill a lot of innocents in this country. They'll use it the way however John Ashcrack and people like that want it used instead. The abuses have already gotten completely out of hand. The Denver cops were busted a while back for keeping files on as many as 10,000 people as potential subversives and thus terrorists because they'd been seen attending an Amnesty International meeting. Or American Friends Service Committee. How did they know their names? They had people on police time or overtime infiltrating those organizations. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know they have those BART trains, Bay Area Rapid Transit that goes under the bay, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, the rest. Well, closest thing we've got to a subway. Now they've got cops with dogs on the trains to fight terrorism. Drug-sniffing dogs. So, that way, if they find a terrorist sitting there with a doobie in their pocket, they're going to smoke when they get home. They're going to bust them, goddammit. We'll show Osama we're serious now. New McCarthyism, exactly, and I don't think the FBI should have any more tools than they already have to enforce and implement new McCarthyism. And Mr. Steele told us to ask ourselves, what do we want in a new FBI? I had a simple answer to that, mass resignations. After all, Mr. Steele also said that our current law enforcement community has been totally bought off by corporations. Duh. And, you know, if there's going to be a new FBI, why not go after corporate crime, crime in the suites instead of crime in the streets, and go after gangs that really do hurt people and do human trafficking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the FBI hasn't just had this turned around ass backwards in the 60s. It was ass backwards from the get-go, as far as I'm concerned. Another little interesting visit I had while I was here was I found out an old friend of mine Sorry, Mr. Steele, please. Anyway, a friend of mine worked at... How many of you know what the Lomax Archives is? You know, decades before file sharing or even computers, a man named Alan Lomax, picking up where his father left off, even in the 20s, and he's 90 now, and he still watches over this thing, semi-retired, his daughter's there, my friend Don Fleming is there, and others. Anyway, he was going around in the American South taping music sung in the fields, going into Mexico, going to Europe, taping American folk music. But if it was a field holler, he didn't drag them into a recording studio. He recorded them right in the field and knew enough about the technology that the recordings are usable enough today that Rounder has put out dozens of CDs after all these years reissuing all the stuff Lomax collected. And it's so huge, not all of it will ever come out. He filmed people. He photographed people. One photo I saw was of him interviewing a 90-year-old man about his days as a slave. That's the kind of information that gets lost when people like Clear Channel are in charge of the radio and PBS and the Discovery Channel are in charge of our history. You know, this is really interesting stuff. They even let me rifle through a box of old 78s on the floor. Ooh, this looks weird. Play this. Ooh, there was even a black R&B single with a song called Jungle Bunny on it. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, got one out, and it was an old hillbilly song about what a bad man John Dillinger was. But then it occurred to me last night during the other discussion, wait a minute, why is that guy singing about John Dillinger? What made John Dillinger so important, such a pop star in a way, just like the media made Timothy McVeigh and Osama bin Laden pop stars? Dillinger was a pop star. Pretty Boy Floyd, Alvin Karpis, pop stars. because they were small time, they were self-contained, and they were easy to catch to make the FBI look good. Why didn't the FBI put that kind of energy into getting rid of Al Capone, let alone all the corporate sharks who got away with causing the Great Depression and the stock market crash of 1929? Even then, don't get mad at the executives who threw you in the street. Fear John Dillinger instead. This goes way, way, way back. So, one of the ways to turn this around is, once again, as I said the last time, don't hate the media, become the media. The problem with Clear Channel owning so much of the radio and Disney owning so much more and other CBS and others owning so much more is the music we're exposed to and the news and viewpoints we're exposed to are in the hands of fewer and fewer and fewer people, all of whom didn't get where they are by being nice guys. Let's put it that way. So that's the reason that spreading information is more important than ever, not just on the net, but one-on-one with people you know. If they start spouting the, yeah, we should go invade Iraq, or them damn welfare cheats cost me my job, or something. Bush is great, whatever. Wish Giuliani was still here. Don't just tune them out as being hopelessly unreachable, but sit down and talk to them. You know, they may not agree with you the very first time, but have you ever disagreed with something and then slept on it and eventually decided maybe it was right after all? If we don't plant these seeds, who will? And time... Oh, we got it. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. And time is of the essence because... the Bush gang is still hell-bent on sending, now they're saying as many as 300,000 ground troops into Iraq, just in case, just so we can kill Saddam Hussein, because Cowboy Bush and his barnyard friends think it's a cool idea. Not all of those 300,000 troops are going to come home again, and if enough of them die, the draft is back. Ladies and gentlemen, and Canada ain't going to let draft dodgers in this time. The corporations have bought them off, too. Worse yet, think of the impact. You know, they already hate us so bad for the first Gulf War. We got Osama bin Laden. We have a 99% disapproval rating of the Saudi royal family by the Saudi people. You know, some people who know more about it over there, predicting that the Saudi regime, the PLO, and the Jordanian monarchy and the Egyptian dictatorship are all going to fall to his violent Islamic fundamentalists in the next 5 years. It's the religious dissent is the only kind allowed where you don't get killed for doing it, and look what it's spawning. And we are fanning those fires the more we abuse people all over that part of the world. And if we send that many troops into Iraq, what kind of fires is that going to start among the general populations all wanting to do one mass intifada against us in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Algeria, Libya, Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world, Pakistan, where the population was already estimated to be 15% pro-Taliban, 30% pro-Taliban, a Pakistani Taliban movement in the armed forces. That's going to empower them like nothing ever has, and that's going to mean that many more Osama bin Ladens, that many more suicide bombers, that many more Al-Qaedas, and the end-term result will be maybe Georgie Jr. can give his father Saddam's head on a plate, but it's going to make our lives less and less and less and less safe. The way they're running the war on terrorism now. In other words, we go into Iraq now, it will be the worst foreign policy mistake in our entire lifetime, by far, in terms of the backlash that's going to be hitting us, blowing up our buildings, blowing up us for generations to come. You kill off everybody who sympathizes with bin Laden, what are their kids going to be like? What are their kids going to be like? At some point, you got to say, this isn't working. There's no way we will ever win a war on terrorism. Israel's been fighting one since the minute of their birth. Have they won yet? Have the British won their war on terrorism in Northern Ireland? And yet somebody as dumb as Bush and as greedy as his friends think we can take on the whole world and win? I don't think so. But one of many things most people and even a lot of people in this room probably don't know, because the media in this country, corporate media, is so tightly controlled now, is that no one in Europe or no one in Canada is down with a war on Iraq. Not even Tony Blair, the biggest cheerleader for the war on terrorism, supports an invasion of Iraq. We will burn our bridges with people over there, too, if we do that. But this also means that does have some restraint and everything. It means that even the Bush mob may at least listen to reason if even Blair and the Germans and the French and the Canadians, the Japanese say, don't do that, or you know, we are not going to be down with you anymore, and it's going to cost you dearly economically. Even Bush can listen to that. Therefore, it's very important, if you keep in touch with people overseas, to urge them to put pressure on their own governments to hold the line against Bush's crazy war and save the world from the United States government. Feels lonely right now to oppose the war on terrorism, but that was the same thing people felt when just a handful of people, after Lyndon Johnson rammed through the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and sent all those troops into Vietnam. By the way, the Gulf of Tonkin incident is now even acknowledged by the corporate media to have not really happened. So, yeah, like what else? Anyway, you know, and that makes me wonder whether bin Laden even exists. What happened at the Trade Center, you bet that exists, and that was pretty bad. But was it really all because of one guy whose cartoon stereotype of what American races are supposed to hate is just a little too convenient? It was all that one guy in the cave, man. The turban, the beard. And, you know what we did by pinning it all on bin Laden instead of trying to look under even one rock to address the root causes of all this? It means we made him an overnight pop star all over the Middle East. People are naming their sons Osama. There's Pakistani kids eating bags of candy with his picture on it now. You could even get cell phones there. We know you have a little image on the screen. There's Osama. There's the buildings going down. That's how other people are seeing this. You know, that's the kind of fire we are playing with. And the way to get through to people that the war on terrorism is wrong is just, you know, this works even with people with flags in the windows and flags on the cars. And, you know, as much as I feel threatened by that image after all these years of it being co-opted by the bullies on the right, you have to let people have their flags. People are expressing grief and outrage and sympathy for the families and pride in their country, and not all the people flying the flags are that fond of Bush either. So give them freedom of speech. Let them have the flags. But the way to get through to people that the war on terrorism is wrong is just to point out, as I said earlier, the way we're running it even now today is piss poor military strategy. Because we're just planting the seeds for more terrorists, which is going to make our lives less safe. My girlfriend's stepmother is so gung-ho Republican that she has a whole wing of her house devoted to a Republican museum, open to the public, with Reagan and Bush memorabilia and an example of every single American flag ever made. When it was pointed out that this was piss poor military strategy, my girlfriend, even this woman, stopped and said, "You know, that's a really good point. That's the way to get people to stop and think. And we have a long ways to go if we're going to mobilize a movement in this country to put the brakes on Bush." They already smelled enough of a rat that they postponed invading Iraq from before the election, thinking it will win lots of votes for them, to after the election. That's progress in a way, but it would be better just to pull the plug on this whole thing right now before we get into deeper and deeper doo-doo, to borrow his father's phrase, and wind up paying for it with our own security for generations to come. Mr. Steele proposed a troika of a president and Colin Powell and Sam Nunn. I don't think so. Even Colin Powell is now saying, we need regime change in Iraq. Let's go kill a bunch of people there. Powell, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, way back as a young officer, helped cover up the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. He ain't no dove, my friend.